Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2019. Lecture 20, delivered on April 13, 2019. The title of this lecture is Net Present Value and Internal Rate of Return.
Today, Net Present Value and Internal Rate of Return. As I said, I encouraged you to bring a calculator, the financial calculator, the TI-83, with you, or to have a laptop computer so you can pull it out and use your virtual TI and your Excel, because I'm going to show you some ways to do some problems in Excel. And I'm going to pull up both of these now. Now, I will put up, if I remember not to exit without saving, I will put up this sheet, or maybe a little cleaned up version of it, on ReggieNet tomorrow at some point so that you can go through it. These are the kinds of things that would be expected of you when you go into a business environment. You should be able to do these kinds of routines. Now, just to begin this, year in free cash flow. Now, year zero, year one, and then I'm going to fill in. Well, that really sucked. Try that one again. Okay, grab it. There. Now, I'm going to go through year zero. You're going to have an investment. You're going to put in an investment in this project of negative $250,000. And then in year one, it's going to start to pull some positive cash flow, $10,000. And then in year two, it starts to pick up speed, 30,000. And then 40,000 in year three. And then 50,000. And then it begins to level off. And then it holds on in years four, five, and six, it's 50,000. And then it begins to lose its mojo again out here. $40,000 in year seven. And then you're just getting sort of like the tail end of it, $20,000. And then you've got $10,000. And you've got a little bit of remaining, sell off the remaining inventory, get it out of the warehouse at 5,000, and you've got a salvage value of $500 at the end of the project. Now, the first thing is going to be a kind of an obvious one. Now, imagine calculating this by hand, and, well, first things first here. Now, we're going to put in a couple of other numbers here. Discount rate. And let's take a discount rate of 7.4%. Now, the first thing you would probably think to do, okay, let's find the net present value. and the internal rate of return. Now, this is actually not going to be that hard of an exercise. Let's justify those to pretty them up. Now, the net present value equals NPV and your rate. See, if I put my rate right there, I don't have to type it. One thing about these formulas, and this is partly in a class in Excel, is that instead of putting a formula in a number into your calculating formula, you put the number somewhere else so that you can change it at will to get what if. This has become a standard well beyond Excel, and it became the way we write web pages, in fact. Back when I was first writing web pages, everything was in this code. Your headings, your title of your blog post, for example, the story and anything else and graphics, it was all on one page. Then came in the late 1990s, the early 2000s, a new way where you separated the code that actually interpreted text and graphics into a page separate from what you had to say. So that, in other words, you didn't have to rewrite the whole page every time you had a new post on your blog. You just wrote the text, and then it was picked up by the code, which was a separate piece, formatted and all that. That was a major innovation. This is how Excel works, too. B14, but I may have a little bit of a problem here, but we got our rate, and we got our values. Now, notice that in Excel, whoa. Let me back off here. Oh, well, that's okay. I'm going to do one quick dirty thing here. I'm going to remember to put the salvage value in here with this. Now, what would be the best way to do that? I am going to probably... put another column called free cash flow final, which will be all of these except for the last one, in which I will also add in that one. Remember, salvage value you add to the last one. Now, this looks a little cumbersome, but it also allows us to change the salvage value if we wanted to do that without fiddling with the cash flow that we're going to be calculating on. So now, the net present value is going to be NPV, open parentheses, the rate, comma, the array. And that thing again, that column of numbers is called an array. When you get out there in the business environment and they're talking Excel, if they say array, that is just a vector, a column of data. That's just a fancy word for it. Okay. Well, we got that this is a negative net present value project. Now, let's try something else. Let's just get a little fancy here. And the next one I'm going to say equals if that number, what you got for the NPV, is less than zero, then type reject. And you put it in quotation marks, comma. And the other part of it is that comma, then the next thing, otherwise, put accept. My ass, what did I do wrong there? I put a comma there instead. That's supposed to be a less than sign. I'm sorry. The if statement is actually has a lot of power in it because it allows an end user not to have to make a decision on his or her own. The Excel sheet just simply says, now in this one it's obviously a simple thing, but you can have the Excel sheet analyze data and give you information. And then the internal rate of return, okay, equals IRR. And all you do in this is give it the values. Now, you can give Excel a guess. I mean, almost no one does. I mean, why would you guess at it? Just ignore it. It's an optional there. You know, if you feel badly for making Excel work so hard, then you can put in a guess and let it sort of start there on its journey. Okay, so let's get our format. And for this one, let's do a percentage to two decimal places. So the internal rate of return is 4.17%. So obviously, discounting at 7.4% is going to be way into the negative net present value area here. Okay? Now, one last stupid pet trick. Suppose that the company has given you a hurdle rate on projects. And suppose it's given you a hurdle rate of let's say that it gives you, their hurdle rate for new projects is 4%. Okay. In this one, I'm going to say for the decision, if you're doing hurdle rate, internal rate of return, if the number here is greater than or equal to the hurdle rate, comma, accept. Otherwise, comma, reject. And again, we're teaching this at your level to begin to get you really comfortable with doing some little tricks. These are the things that if you're not really experienced with Excel, you're going to be in the work environment and you're going to say, wait a minute, how'd you do that? And of course, if you want to be creative, you don't say reject. You say, so in other words, if I put in 5%, okay. Don't do too much. But at the same time, you can put in whatever you want. Yeah.
What is B16 4.17?
Can
you click on that?
B16? I calculate the internal rate of return, which is IRR. Now, here's where things get a little bit dodgy. The net present value will always give you a true, clean answer. However, it requires that you enter a discount rate, which means that you're going to have to use something like the capital asset pricing model to get a discount rate for this number right here. See that discount rate? To do a net present value, which gives you a straight up, never an issue with whether it is telling you the truth or not, answer. But the price of that is that you have to have a way to get the discount rate for the cash flows. The discount rate would represent the risk of those cash flows, and the capital asset pricing model can probably do that for you. But you would then have to say, the beta of this cash flow is. So where do you get that beta? Well, is it the beta of the company? Not necessarily. Well, how do we get it? See, the beta of the company represents the composite of the risks of the whole company. The beta of a cash flow would represent the unique risks of that cash flow. So where would you get that? The way we oftentimes do it is we use what is called a comp or an index of comps. What I mean by that is we look at this project. Okay, this project is, let's say, electric cars. Okay? Now, we're going to have a cash flow from this production of these electric cars. What would be the beta of that? Well, let's look at the beta of the whole company, Tesla. No, that would not be a good idea because Tesla has two very different divisions. So the beta of the company is a composite of two very different risk structures. What we would probably need to do is see if we could find a traded stock of a company that did only electric cars, a comparable, in other words. So what you do is there are actually services, and you've got access to some of them through Standard & Poor's Net Advantage, where you can say, I want to find a company that does only this one thing. And if you get a list of companies, then you could take like an average beta of them. That's the way you can pull a comp out, get a beta, then get a discount rate from the capital asset pricing model. That's about how you do it. That's why it's so tempting to go and grab an internal rate of return, because you don't need a discount rate. You don't need to go through all that legwork. All you have to do is have a hurdle rate in your IRR, and you say yes or no. The easier, the less likely it is reliable. Here's the problem with internal rate of return. Now, remember the definition of internal rate of return. No, 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 no. Let's try this. Sir, what is the definition of the internal rate of return as you madly go through your notes? I know, right? Well, what are you writing, a novel about this class?
It's the internal rate of return is the return the company needs to accept the project.
Oh, that was so far off. I mean, it was almost good. Yeah.
It's the discount rate that makes the net present value zero.
It is the discount rate that makes the net present value zero. That's very good. Give her a cookie. And you, be grateful to her. She got you off the hook. She saved you. Okay. Okay, look, in other words, when you are doing net present value, you've got on the vertical axis the net present value, and on the horizontal axis, you've got different discount rates. I can't draw a straight line worth anything today. Now, at low discount rates, your net present value will be positive, but as you increase the discount rate, it will get progressively more negative. It will go down. The point where it crosses from positive, the discount rate, where it crosses from positive NPV to negative NPV is the internal rate of return. Okay, well, that's useful to us. And there's no problem, okay? So in other words, the hurdle rate here was 4.1, the hurdle rate, we were given a hurdle rate of 5%. The internal rate of return, so in other words, this company has a hurdle rate of 5% here. So at 4.17% internal rate of return, it went negative back here 83 basis points before that. So in other words, we reject this project. Now, if the hurdle rate we had been given had been 3%, the project was still positive NPV at 3%. So if the hurdle rate is out here at 4%, then we would accept. No big thing. Internal rate of return simply tells us the crossing point from positive NPV discount rates to negative NPV discount rates. Herein lies the problem, though. This comes from math. I'm not sure they would have taught, I know part of this you would have been taught in high school algebra, but the other part of it, well, okay. From high school algebra, you were shown polynomials. A polynomial is just a string of independent variables to different powers, added up or subtracted or whatever. So in other words, y equals 4x squared plus 3x minus 1. That's a polynomial. It's called a degree 2 polynomial, the highest power to occur. This is going somewhere, don't worry. Let's try this one. Y equals negative 1/3 x plus 8. That is a degree 1 polynomial. Because the highest power that x to which x occurs is 1. Okay. In fact, y equals 5 is a polynomial. From the time you started learning numbers, you were actually learning polynomials. Because 5 is really 5x to the 0 power. X to the 0 is 1, is the number 1. So this is a degree 0 polynomial. You've been working with degree 0 polynomials your whole life. And then a degree 3, et cetera, y equals 2x cubed minus 4x plus 4x squared plus 3x minus 8. That's a degree 3 polynomial. No big thing. Now, the interesting thing is when you graph polynomials, you get an interesting relationship. Here's how what a degree 0 polynomial, if you were to graph y equals 5, it's a horizontal line crossing the y-axis at 5. It's just a horizontal line. If you're going to graph a degree 1 polynomial, that's a straight line. Notice how a straight line crosses the x-axis only once, degree 1. Here's a degree 2 polynomial. Now, some degree 2 polynomials might touch and come back up. Some degree 2 polynomials miss altogether. So the most roots a degree 2 polynomial can have is 2. It could have 1 if it just nicks and comes back up, or it could have 0 if it comes down and misses and comes back up. And a degree 3 polynomial, it could look like this. It could look like this. Whoops. Or it could look like the most it can cross the x-axis is 3 times. Every polynomial has a degree, and that tells you the maximum number of times it can hit the axis. The NPV function. Let me cross that out and do it this way. You notice in the Excel example here that the sign of this cash flow switched from negative to positive once, only once. In other words, that translates graphically into a degree 1 polynomial. All the graphs that I've done were straight lines, downward sloping. It switches from negative to positive, and then it stays positive. The problem is that if the cash flow switches sign more than once, it's going to do that. It's going to look like a parabola. If it switches signs twice, negative to positive to negative, it would have 2. if the thing switches signs three times, negative to positive to negative, it'll have three roots. In other words, there won't be a single internal rate of return. There will be multiple internal rates of return if the cash flow switches sign more than once. And not one of those internal rates of return have any financial meaning whatsoever. They are completely spurious. Now, the calculator in Excel will give you an answer, but all they've given you is the first one that they found. If the calculator starts searching down here, it's going to find this one right here and report it. You think, oh, there's the internal rate of return. No, because it didn't look up here, there was another one. And neither of them means anything. Or it could give you this one, and all that meant was that it was starting to search somewhere around here, and it located this zero of the polynomial. That's all it did. And it had no financial meaning. It has mathematical meaning, lots of mathematical meaning, but it has no financial meaning whatsoever. And that's why the internal rate of return is a suspicious method. You would never want to use it directly unless you knew that the sign of the cash flows switched once and only once. But in the real world, that's not going to happen all the time. Matter of fact, it's rather, well, I shouldn't say it's unusual, but let me do another one. I'll take my originals. Make a new sheet. Okay? And go back here and get my words. Let's take on another one. In this case, we're going to start with an initial investment of $250,000. Now I'll draw out a somewhat different pattern here. Let's say this one is $15,000 in year one, $30,000 in year two, $38,000 in year three, $51,000 in year four. But then you have to add new technology, you move in new computers, new factory manufacturing equipment, and in year five, you're going to have a negative $20,000. Then in year six, your sales pick back up to about where they were before. As a matter of fact, they're better now because you've got an improved product. And the rest go down. In a fairly orderly fashion. And then you've got year 10. The last year of the project, you're going to have, let's say, $7,500 with a salvage value of $250. Okay, this is not going to, an internal rate of return is not going to help because you will have multiple crossings of the discount rate axis. Any internal rate of return I calculate will just be a meaningless number. You'll get a number. I mean, I can put one into Excel here, and it'll, go, 10-4. Okay? Now, let's do that. I'm not sure. I couldn't remember the one number that I was going to use for this, but let's take that 7.4% again. Equals NPV of that against this cash flow stream. And it's a bad project, okay? I'm not even going to do the internal rate of return because it's going to get it wrong. There are those who are fans of internal rate of return who are not going to take no for an answer. So they have this modified internal rate of return, MIRR. Now, the modified internal return rate of return just sucks.com if you have to calculate it on your own. Because here's how it works. I'm going to draw a simplified cash flow stream. Negative, let's do one, negative 8,000 year zero, then 4,000 in year two, year one, then 3,000 in year two. Well, no, let's do it this way. Negative 2,000 in year two, and then in year three, 3,000, and then at the end, year four, with salvage value included, so we don't get into that triviality, $2,000. So you see that there is not one sign switch, there are three sign switches. Negative to positive one, positive to negative two, negative to positive three. So you're actually going to get three roots, three IRRs, depending on where you start looking. No good, it's useless. Here's how they modify the internal rate of return to get this done. It requires two things. You're going to need to do present and future values. You're going to need two more. Now, I'm pretty sure I've got the homework so that you don't need to use two. The one is the same as the other. But you're going to need your cost of capital or the weighted average cost of capital. Let's say that that is 6%. And then you're going to need another one called the reinvestment rate. This is a rate, if you've got money, the money's coming into the company, at what rate of return, what could you earn by reinvesting it in your best project, risk-adjusted project? And that would should be above this 6%. Let's say that that one is 8%, okay? Okay, what you're going to do is you're going to take the positive cash flows forward to the end. So the 4,000 year one, you're going to take it clear out here 1, 2, 3 years times 1 plus the reinvestment rate to the third power. You're finding a future value of it. Hold on here. It actually is tedious. If you've got a long cash flow, this gets to be a lot like work. Excel's going to make it easy for you. Okay, so then you would take also the positive 3,000 and you would pull that out to the end. So you'd have 3,000 times 1 plus 0.08 to the first power, because it's got 1 year to come to the end of the project. So you're going to take the 2,000 that compounded 4,000 and the compounded 3,000, and you're going to put them together and add them up. Okay? God, I don't want to do this, but I'm going to. But I don't want to. Okay. Anyway, I'm going to just say, all right, 2,000 plus 1.08 to the third, plus 4,000 times 1.08 to the third, plus 3,000 times 1.08 to the first, which is 1.08. And you get $10,278.79. That is the terminal value of your positive cash flows. Now, you're going to take the present value of the negative cash flows. And here there's only one, so we are going to put that back at the cost of capital. Follow with me. So in other words, I'm going to take that negative 2,000 and I'm going to discount that back at 1.06%. And that was 2 years to the negative second. So in other words, the cash outflows you treat as cost of your capital. And you put them together, and in that case, what I would get here is the negative 8,000 minus 2,000 times 1.06 to the negative second. That's negative 9780. Finally, what you do is you take that positive cash flow there at the end and you find its present value at the cost of capital. So that would be plus $10,279 times 1 plus 0.06. The cost of capital, when you bring it back, it's the cost of capital, to the negative 4 years. But you don't have to do it that way. What you can do on the TI calculator is this. Watch. Whoops, I didn't mean to do that. I want to pull up the TI. Okay, I'm going to now find the internal rate of return. Apps, finance, internal rate of return. Now watch what I do. I'm going to say, at the beginning of the project, I throw in $9,780. And then I have no cash flow. In years 1, 2, and 3. You put zeros in there, and then in the last slot, I put the 10,279. Because essentially, you cleared out all the positive and negative values and brought them forward in time or back in time. The positives you took forward in time, the negatives you brought back in time. Let's see if we can get an internal rate of return. Don't give me that error business. Oh, I forgot to put in. I'm always doing some mistake on this calculator. Why? Well, it's not letting me put in a parenthesis. Okay, let's try that again. No, no. Oh, you're right. You're good. See, I wanted to see if anyone caught that. Second insert braces. They're braces. Let me try that again. That didn't actually... Second, that doesn't look like a brace. There it looked like a brace. Now down here at the end, put in the brace. You're right. Brace, close parenthesis. Sorry, cash flows are in braces. A 1.25% internal rate of return. This is a modified, an MIRR. This is a modified internal rate of return. It's a miserable 1.25. So in other words, any hurdle rate above 1.25, you're going to reject. But this is how it's done if you're really hard up. Now, you're thinking, well, thatsucks.com. I don't want to do that. I don't want to go to that web page. But you can do it in Excel. It's actually fairly easy. Equals MIRR, open parenthesis, MIRR. This keyboard is giving me fits. Now, you give it the numbers first. Give it the numbers first. And then comma, you give it the cost of capital rate. Okay, the financing rate. How much it costs you to finance projects? 6%, comma, then you give it the reinvestment rate, which here was 8%. Close the parenthesis. I hope this works. Huh. That has happened to me way too many times. C2 through C12... I'll bet I calculated wrong on the calculator. Yeah. I'll bet that's why I came out different, because I did something wrong on the calculator. But that's a modified internal rate of return. All you do is give it, just like you're about to do, just like you would be doing an internal rate of return, but you've got to give it the cost of capital rate, the financing rate, and you've got to give it the reinvestment rate. In the problems that you're given, that you're doing for the homework, I say use the same interest rate for the cost of capital and the financing rate. But if you do it in Excel, just put the numbers in there. And by the way, if you haven't figured it out, you can go into those homework. When you're in a homework problem that has a table, just highlight the whole table, copy it, and paste it into Excel, and then do your work in Excel. If you haven't already figured out that that's what you can do that. If you're given a table of numbers to work with, just copy it out of the problem and just open Excel, paste it in there, maybe fix the data if there's some glitch or weird stuff, and then go from there. But there's your MIRR calculated right there. If you have to do it by hand, as you can see, I did something wrong when I keyed the numbers in on the in here. I'll bet it was somewhere in those calculations right there. But doing it in Excel, and you won't get the answer wrong. If they ask for 2 decimal places of accuracy, right-click the cell, format, number, percentage, decimal places, whatever they tell you. If they tell you 2, just click 2, otherwise, whatever. So it's a 4.79% modified internal rate of return. Now, one thing about this method is that the bigger the difference between your reinvestment rate and your cost of capital, the more likely you are to accept a project under modified internal rate of return. Let me say that again. The larger the spread between your cost of capital and your reinvestment rate, the more likely modified internal rate of return is going to give you an accept. The more likely modified internal rate of return is going to give you an accept flag. That is MIRR. So the tools now are these. And by the way, your capital budgeting, in other words, deciding whether to do a project or not, you choose either net present value or internal rate of return as your decision method. If internal rate of return is not appropriate, you use modified MIRR in its place if there's more than one sign switch. Okay, so we're there at that point. Here's the last problem that can be encountered. Let's say that there are companies where, well, we use both methods, net present value and internal rate of return. You shouldn't be doing that to begin with. You just shouldn't. Let's cook dinner in the oven and in the microwave. One or the other. Shake and bake or nuke and puke. One or the other, not both. This has to do with mutually exclusive projects where you can't do, you've got two projects on the table. You cannot, for some reason, do both of the projects. We have this one piece of land and we could put one of two, we can put a factory on it. We have a choice of this factory on the land or this factory on the land. Or we have a very important genius, a project genius. We can put her on this project, or we can put her on this project, but we cannot put her on both of them because the cloning thing we did just kind of didn't work out, and it was not really our fault. It was just that there was, you know, we bumped the... The other you was really a nice person, but you know we kind of encouraged her to walk out the 18th store story and then explain there was just some weird monster. Okay, look, that's a mutual exclusive. I've seen them before. Now, in theoretical finance and economics, they say, well, there's no such thing. If a project is good, you can always find the financing for it. In the real world, no. No, there are going to be situations like this. As a matter of fact, I encountered one. It was they were going to do a pay-to-play kind of ball field, a baseball field. They could get, it was not really pay-to-play, but they were going to, had to decide whether they were going to use this piece of land that they got on a grant for soccer, or were they going to make it into a baseball field. They couldn't do both with it. And I asked them why not, and they explained something about the grass and stuff like that. Although in the end, it kind of didn't work out either way. But essentially, and then they were going to make some money off it by leasing it out for some teams that wanted to play. But mostly it was for kids to have fun on and all that. But they were going to make money off it by leasing it out for some kind of real minor league stuff. But anyway, let's show you. Project A. Project B. And we've got the net present value. This is a row, project A, project B. And in this column, net present value and internal rate of return. Now, project A had a net present value of around $12,500. Project B had a net present value of almost 16,000. They were both strongly positive NPV projects. I mean, these would be dreams because usually you don't get net present values that are all that big because you don't find projects that are this prospective. The internal rate of return of Project A was around 18.00%. The internal rate of return of Project B was 15.25%. Do you see right off the bat that the NPV approach says if you can't choose both, you choose B? But the IRR approach says if you can't choose both, you choose A. They give you, this happens, especially if the two projects have very different cash flow patterns. That's where you'll see it, is if one of the projects has front loading. More of the cash flow is loaded to the front, and the other has the cash flows loaded toward the back end. That's one place you'll see this happen. So the question is, this is why you don't want to do both. You just use one, because in the end, you're going to have to choose one of them anyway, if it's mutually exclusive. So what would be the rule for this? Always, always, net present value is superior. It never makes a mistake because of some weirdness in the cash flows. That's just the reality of it. The unfortunate part of saying that is that there is a bias, and I brought this up on Monday. Our analyses are sensitive to the timing of cash flows. NPV is very sensitive. NPV favors projects where you get hard cash flow early. Net present value favors projects where you get your really good cash flows are in the near future. That is contrary to what we need for where you guys are going to be, where a lot of the projects that are going to matter to the future, matter to you in your middle and old age, matter to the survival of our civilization, are going to have cash flows out there sometimes decades. So this is the flaw in NPV. That's why, if you're majoring in finance or you are otherwise have issues in your mental centers, you'll take my derivatives course, because there is a new method. You would never use it for normal finance, but for the big stuff, mining asteroids, teleportation, borging humans so they're part human, part machine, teleportation, all of the things you're going to see in your lifetimes. Growing organs to replace the ones that fail on you. Growing meat so we no longer have to kill cows and pigs. We just grow their muscles in giant towers. All of those are going to happen in 10, 20, 30 years. So we need a method for the high tech that is neither of these. Take my derivatives course. You'll see how it works and who's using it now. That's all I have for you. Go home. Thank you.